Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 20th of the first month, 2026. And we are most now talk here in the capital city. And we're doing the most, we're doing the best we can under the circumstances in which we were given. So today we are talking about correctional facility. Now, the reason that I'm talking about correctional facility is not because I'm a hater, or it's not because I am a what. It is more about, I asked wanna know if it is like that or it is not like that. I just want to know. And the reason that we are bringing it up is because, why not? If not, why not? Right? We're bringing it up because we can. So there has been a lot of, chit chat around the matter. So it just so happens, right? That, when somebody big, you know, this is one of those conversations that I have to handle with absolute due diligence and absolute care, and I must speak properly so that it is not an unwise situation. It should be correct facts, direct. So, when somebody prominent's child is awarded an opportunity to do something, whatever it is, be it a tender, be it a job, be it an opportunity to, you know, to be your heart surgeon, be it an opportunity to be the cleaner, be it an opportunity. You know, when somebody prominent's child is given an opportunity of that nature or of any nature in this country, we deem it to be corruption, right? We deem it to be corruption because how many other kids are being awarded the same opportunities? And it's just like the divorce rate. So 5,000 people got married 5 years ago. 5,000 people got married five years ago. And out of that 5,000 people that got married 5 years ago, 100 of them are filing for divorce or got divorced. Now, when we look at that, we're like, yo, yeah, but 100 couples, 100 couples, they don't want anymore. The divorce rate in this country is so high. But if we are doing percentages, ladies and gentlemen, if we're doing percentages and we look at 100 out of 5,000, that means it is 2%. 2% of the 5,000 people got divorced. Now, I would look at that as a success. I would say, oh, so we got 98% correct. We got 98% of the ball rolling. We got 98% of people that actually genuinely married each other and stayed together, whether they're happy or unhappy, where they are, whether it is arranged or not arranged, whether it is a chit chat that we are putting up out there. It doesn't matter. They're still together. Great. I would look at it from that perspective. But yet, we as the nation, we are so quick. We are so quick to say, no, marriages are failing. And also one thing that I've noticed also, it's usually the unmarried ones that are saying things like marriage is not working. Is marriage not working, or is it your partner that has not proposed to you yet and now you are bitter? I'm just asking for a friend. Is marriage not working, or you don't actually understand numbers? Because I believe numbers don't lie. I believe that 2%, right? 2% ain't nothing. Compared to 98, ain't nothing. Because you still get an A. Even in school, right? You still get an A. You're still part of the honorary students. You're still part of the A students. You're still part of, it might even be an A plus. Not really sure about the symbols, but I know it's an A going up, and it is, right? And if you got a 98%, would you be upset, or would you just be grateful that you made it? Cause I know I would be grateful that I made it. I'll be like, whoa. Cause the better wasn't easy. The battle wasn't easy. The climb through to Kilimanjaro wasn't easy. And we made it. And we made it with a 98%. And I'm grateful. And that is how we look at it, right? But I think that many of us are social media activists. Many of us are type, what do you call it? Type happy. It's almost like trigger happy, but it's for typing. I feel like we have an opinion about many things that we can't actually dive into because we have zero experience in it. And we also don't understand. We don't really understand. Now, if a divorce lawyer, right? If a divorce lawyer was sitting there and telling us that, yeah, a lot of people are getting divorced, people shouldn't get married, then yeah, I would be like, oh, okay. Because you see this a lot, right? You see this on a daily basis. You've got what? Experience. That's why even when you're applying for a job, they ask for experience. Why? Because experience kind of shifts your, the dynamics within your mind a little bit. It shifts how you understand things. It shifts how you perceive work to be. It shifts. There's a shift that happens because a person without experience on the job, right, might have a problem with dealing with certain situations, might have a serious problem with working with other colleagues, might have a problem with being listening to basic instructions, might have a problem with comprehension of basic instructions, might even have a problem with people's tone, people's demeanor, and you realize that this is a job, this is not a kindergarten, and nobody is here to babysit your emotions, right? If you are lucky enough, then you get somebody to babysit your emotions. But if you don't get lucky enough to be having somebody that's babysitting your emotions, then chomi, it is all good. It is okay, right? So I feel like that's what we have. We have an opinion, especially on the internet. I feel like the internet is the one place that we are so free, but yet we are not our truths. We are not living in our truths. I feel like we are not living in our truths, and we say anything for anything. And it's not even for the likes. It's not even for the clout. It's just so that you can have an opinion about something that you absolutely don't know. Now, in most cases, you don't find, right, people that are in marriages complaining. You don't, stable marriages, you don't find them. It's usually the divorcees, the ones that are going through tough times, and the ones that have never been in it. They are the ones that complain about it. And that's what? 2%. The other 98% is like, I'm happy. The other 90% is like, I fail. I don't know what I would do without my wife. My wife is the love of my life. My goodness. This house wouldn't be running without my wife and my wife and my husband, And it's running, you know, and it's going smoothly. And also, I think that many a times when we hear about other people's problems, especially those that are married, when we hear other people's problems, right, we say things like, that's why I don't want to get married. But the truth is, I believe that the only reason you're not married is because no one asked you. The only reason you're not married is because no one wants to marry you. The only reason you're not married is because maybe you are not ready. It's not because you don't want. Nobody wants to grow old alone, guys. Let's not sandwich each other here on these social medias. Nobody wants to grow old alone. Nobody wants to do things alone. Nobody wants to be an aloner. Everybody wants to be with somebody. Everybody wants to grow old with somebody. And if you don't, right, then there's something that you must work on internally. There's something about you that must be worked on. I'm not saying you're crazy. I'm not saying that there's something wrong with you, but I'm saying that there's something pretty close to wrong with you, because, you know, when you age with somebody, it's so much better than aging by yourself. Do you know that if you die in your house and you have pets, they'll eat you, except fish. They'll most probably eat you out of hunger. when you start decomposing and stuff, they'll start eating your face first, because they first lick you and lick you and lick you and lick you. And then later on, you just start smelling like meat. You don't start smelling human anymore. You just start smelling like meat. And I'm not judging you animal people. I'm just saying, if you have a partner there and you die, at least they'll give you a dignified burial. We're hoping, if you guys like each other enough. But the social media thing, the type contests that we are having on social media, especially about issues that don't actually involve us, because we've never been in marriages. We've never been married. We've never been having a spouse. We've never ticked off that box at home affairs, married. We've never ticked that box off. So even if you are married in your heart, you're not married by paper. Even if you are married spiritually, you're not married by paper. Even if you are married in your soul of soul, it's like we are married. Like we are married, and married is completely different things, Chomi. Completely different, because the other one is an illusion. And the other one is a fact. And that is why, right? We are talking about these things. We're talking about trigger happy. We're talking about quick to type. Many of us are so quick to type on social media, but we do not actually do our research. Now, as a result of us not doing our research, the correct questions are not popping up. The correct questions are not popping up because we're not doing our research, and we're not diving into something in order for us to understand it and have the correct questions. So the number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. Please call in and then we discuss. So the issue had been that NCS had recruited somebody that did not meet the criteria, did not make the cut, did not meet the criteria of somebody that should be employed by NCS, right? Namibia Correctional Facility or Services, right? And Tate Raphael was also asked, and then he said, no, there are some provisions that can be made, and And most of us are running back to the post, or most of us are running back to the advertisement. You know, the advertisement for the positions that were supposed to be filled for like 200 people. So the advertisement in itself says that you must have a grade 12, or if you don't have a grade 12, you must have a grade 11 of the new curriculum. And that is what everybody's fighting. Yeah, mara sobiso. But me, when I look at it, I see so many flaws. I see so many flaws. For starters, it's unconstitutional. It is unconstitutional to discriminate against somebody for having a disability, for having mental health issues. It is a problem. But yet on their application, right, it is, you must not have mental health issues. Now, when we say mental health issues, exactly which issues are they talking about? Because you can most be perfectly normal, because we are most advocating for it. We are advocating for it. We are saying, kucha, no, everybody in Namibia must not be discriminated against according to color, status, creed, gender, what. We are saying that it's most part of our chapter 3 of the constitution, kucha. Nobody must be discriminated against. Now, don't we as a people, because we are so focused on a grade 9 getting a job, and we are sitting with our degrees at home and we are not getting a job and they didn't accept us. We are so pressed. And then we are pressed that it is not just anybody's child, it's that Shikongo's child. We are so pressed about it. But we are not looking at the bigger picture. Why are we not looking at the bigger picture? We're not looking at the bigger picture because we don't like to do research. We don't like to do research, and we don't like to read, and we don't like to dive into things. We like to be the first one to comment on something on the page. We like to be the first ones to comment. We like to be trigger happy, finger happy when it comes to matters. Especially of the state, matters of the state. And I've once gone to the hospital and I've heard somebody say, kucha, I'll call Lavindao. Eh? I'll call Lavindao and tell Lavindao what you guys are doing. And I was like, wow. Okay. That's nice. Must be great. I'll call Lavindao. And I think that many of us are not actually doing our research when it comes to serious things, and we are not contesting it. Now, I also understand that everybody has their own preferences. Everybody has their own preferences. Everybody has their own thing that they want, right? So you are allowed, you have freedom, chom. You have freedom to say that in your facility, right? If it's private, in your facility, you and I, you are not accepting HIV positive people. And in your facility, you are not accepting people with TB. In your facility, you are not accepting people that are albinos. You are not accepting people that are too tall. You're not accepting people that are short. You're not accepting light skinned. You're not accepting dark skinned. You're not accepting fat or thin. You know, you have the right. If your facility is not state owned, if your facility is not public government, if it is not, then you have the right to do that. Mara, you should also have a very good lawyer, because anyone can now take you in. So now you and your disability. Now I want you guys all out there, for you guys that are listening, I want all of you guys with disabilities, all of you guys with mental health issues, all of you guys with all of these, you know, all of these criterias that you don't meet, ne, on these applications. I want you guys to all apply. And then when they reject your application, you go to the lawyer. Because there was, what was his name? I don't remember his name. But before that, you know, let me just search it. Give me 2 seconds, okay?
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chumbi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook, and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! Mm. I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Chumbi from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, Chumbi. Good evening to you if you have just joined us. I'm just talking about trigger happy. I'm talking about the ones that are very quick to type, very quick to answer, very quick, ne, to see a post there on Eagle FM's page, and they are very like, yeah, this is discrimination, this is what, and we are not looking at the bigger picture. So, the story is a sewer. The Namibia Ministry of Defense, NDF, has faced legal challenges regarding HIV discrimination, notably the landmark Nanditume versus Minister of Defense case, where a court ruled that excluding recruits solely on a positive HIV status was unfair discrimination, requiring a boarded fitness assessment, including CD4 count, viral load counts. Despite this, the NDF has repeatedly attempted mandatory tests for recruitment, citing operational needs, leading to ongoing tension between anti-discrimination law and military health requirements, which court generally upholding that HIV status alone isn't a bar if otherwise fit. Okay, so this case is who? Nanditume versus Minister of Defense. So What happened here, Chomi, was that Nanditume, he must now applied to go to NDF. And then when they got there, they checked, kucha, I know he's HIV positive, right? He's HIV positive. And they automatically on the spot declared him unfit to be working, which was discrimination at its peak, because you're not allowed to discriminate against somebody because of anything in this country here. Now, Vele, you guys are so caught up, ne, on Shikongo's daughter getting a job. You guys are so caught up on that one. But why are we not looking at the application? Why are we not looking at the application? Why are we not scrutinizing the application so that we find the loopholes? So I'm saying that everybody with every problem that they are listing there, you guys must apply. If they don't take you, you go and tell the court that they didn't take you because you are an albino. They didn't take you because you have a disability. They didn't take you because you have a mental health issue. They didn't take you. And be sure to attach your doctor's letters. Eh? Be sure to attach your doctor's letter. So they must see, you are having bipolar. You are having schizophrenia. You are suffering from major depressive disorder. You are having this one. Be sure to attach it onto your application. And the minute that they decline you, you go and say, they didn't take me because of this. Because then that means that the government in itself now is doing many funny things. Or some facilities, because it has been very quiet, Moss. And Orafi says that he doesn't like corruption and he's not about that life. And a lot of people actually speak for him. And my problem is omission. My problem is omission, where it is withholding certain information, right? That could change the outcome of something. So it is me intentionally telling you that it is raining outside, right? The time that you're supposed to go, I'm telling you it's raining outside. But I am omitting the fact that I have a very big umbrella that you can actually use and still walk through the rain. In order for you to stay, in order for you to stay home, I tell you that it's raining. You see that it's raining. But I omit the fact that I have an umbrella. I did not forget at all. I know I have an umbrella. I might even be holding the umbrella at the back of me. But I still tell you that it's raining outside, so you can't go. And that is exactly what I think happened on our application. Now, many of us are so pressed. We are pressed. Vakweto grade 9 ape we longer. Vakweto grade 9 ape we longer. It's only because it's Shikongo's tata. It's only because of what? But many of you guys don't read the acts. We don't read the acts. We don't go and do our research. We're not diving into nothing. We are just out here doing the best we can with what little knowledge What little knowledge we are having. And this little knowledge that we are having is exactly why we are not getting far, because we're not asking real questions. We're not asking real questions. We're not asking the things that need to be asked. So we are just talking about, corruption. So we are all saying, we must call ACN, ACCM, corruption. We must call ACC and see what they are going to say. And we must do what, and we must do what. And that's basically all that we are doing. And that's about it. So what is corruption? Let's start there. What is corruption, and how do we go about it? Do we actually understand it? And is corruption the enemy of sustainable development, especially within such a small community such as Namibia? We are such a small community. We have a very big country, yes, but we are scattered everywhere. We are small. To be honest, we are small and we are young. And we talk about corruption, but how bad is it really? Ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of the clip that we were going to play. It is strictly for listening purposes and comprehension purposes, and we will be back on the other side.
I'm sure that many of you are familiar with the Sustainable Development Goals and the 2030 Agenda that have been resolved upon by the United Nations to create a better world by 2030 by ending poverty, fighting inequality, and addressing the urgency of climate change. The general interest in sustainability is increasing, and many are taking action to achieve the goals. But did you know that corruption has the potential to undermine the achievement of all the 17 goals? Did you know that corruption is a great threat to human rights? And did you know that corruption exists in developed countries like Sweden? Some of the problems relating to corruption became clear to me when I first visited Latin America many years ago. It was the beginning of 2008, and I just graduated from law school when I went to Peru to volunteer for a human rights organization. Peru is a beautiful country with abundant natural resources such as oil, natural gas, minerals, fruits, vegetables, and rainforests. It also has historical sites such as the ancient Inca ruin Machu Picchu, attracting over 1 million tourists per year. One would think that all people living in Peru would have a high living standard, and from a mere look at the part of Lima where I lived, one could easily believe that this was the case. However, only a few kilometers away in the dusty outskirts of Lima, poor people were living in the slums, in simple houses built on sand mountains, without access to basic services such as healthcare, education, and electricity. At the same time, a small proportion of the population was immensely rich. I wondered how the wealth of the country could be distributed so unfairly. I soon started to realize that corruption had a lot to do with what I saw. While working at the human rights organization, I assisted my colleagues in a trial against the former president of Peru, who was accused of several severe human rights abuses. He was later found guilty of the human rights abuses, but also of bribery and corruption and other crimes. He was sentenced to over 30 years in prison. About 10 years later, all living former presidents of Peru had either been in prison for corruption or under investigation for corruption. Unfortunately, the situation is similar in many other parts of the world. A few years later, I moved back to Peru to work for a different human rights organization and for the United Nations. Once again, corruption called my attention as I saw with my own eyes how police officers requested money in exchange of letting people cross the border or allowing traffic offenders avoid punishment for their offense. I then realized that corruption was widespread across all levels of society. After almost 2 years in South America, I returned to Sweden, believing that things like corruption and human rights abuses were only to be found elsewhere, far away. But to my great disappointment, I was soon to learn that such things do exist in Sweden too, even if they look different here than in less developed countries. Corruption is a transnational phenomenon that may refer to a variety of actions. There is no single definition of corruption, but the non-governmental organization Transparency International defines corruption as the abuse of entrusted power for private gain. Corruption takes different shapes in different countries, but no country is entirely free from corruption. According to Transparency International's Corruption Perceptions Index, Sweden is perceived to be among the least corrupt countries in the world. However, as you may know, there are several examples of where Swedish companies have paid bribes to obtain contracts or permits when making business abroad. But corruption does take place inside Sweden too. For example, conflicts of interest and so-called friendship corruption or nepotism are common here. By the way, and out of curiosity, does anyone here in the room know about anyone who got a job due to personal connections rather than qualifications? Please raise a hand. Wow, that looks like almost all of you. And in fact, in Sweden, a clear majority do get their jobs due to personal connections. Some sectors are more exposed to corruption than others, the healthcare sector being one of them. Maybe you remember that in the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, when there was still a lack of vaccine, several managers within Swedish municipalities used their power to obtain a vaccine for themselves and their families before healthcare workers and risk groups jumping the vaccine queue. The general perception that corruption is not an issue in Sweden tends to make us naive, and that is dangerous because you need to look for corruption, wearing critical glasses in order to find it. Employees play an important role in discovering corruption, and a law recently came into force in Sweden whereby the protection for whistleblowers was increased to implement an EU directive. As you might have guessed by now, many consider corruption as the largest obstacle for sustainable development. In fact, the Swedish Anti-Corruption Institute, the IMM, and Transparency International refer to anti-corruption as goal zero, no corruption. There are several examples of how corruption negatively impacts the sustainable development goals, and I will now tell you a story to illustrate how corruption can impact goal 3 regarding good health and well-being. My friend's father spent his first summer in the family summer house in Hungary a couple of years ago. He was already ill when he got there, but he got sicker and weaker during the summer and needed hospital care. He eventually died in the hospital. Later, my friend told me that one thing that really tore her apart was that her father was suffering from bed sore in the hospital and that the nurses would not take proper care of him unless they were provided with gifts such as flowers or chocolate. At first, I felt shocked. Then I felt angry. And then I felt sad. Imagine how you would feel if you had a loved one severely ill in hospital and not knowing for sure that he or she was taken care of in the best possible way. Sadly, this is only one of countless stories of when people have had to pay bribes to get access to healthcare that they have the right to. In a corrupt environment, more people die too early. In a crisis, like a pandemic or a war, the risk of corruption generally increases. And the saddest thing of all is that corruption tends to hit the most vulnerable, the hardest. Quite often, the different goals are interconnected and impact each other. One example is anti-corruption that is indirectly mentioned among the goals, and goal 5 regarding gender equality. Did you know that still in 2023, women occupy only around 26% of political posts in national parliaments worldwide? This is partially because election procedures are many times based on friendships, kinships, and other unreasonable considerations instead of qualifications. At the same time, studies have shown that gender equality is an important ingredient in combating corruption. Furthermore, the negative economic effects of corruption generally hit women harder than men. For example, women find themselves forced to pay bribes in relation to healthcare and education more frequently than men, and women are more often victims of so-called sextortion, which means the abuse of authority where sexual services are used as a currency of corruption. When rules can be circumvented through bribes, the risk of an unsafe work environment and unsafe, unfair labor conditions generally increase, along with the risks of forced labor, child labor, and other forms of modern slavery. This shows how corruption can impact Goal 8 regarding decent work and economic growth. Maybe you have read or heard about buildings collapsing, causing workers to die, since poor constructions have been approved with bribes. This has, for example, happened in Bangladesh in 2013, when a factory producing clothes for Western brands collapsed, killing over 1,000 people and leaving over 2,500 people injured. Maybe you remember the images of the collapsed building, the Rana Plaza disaster. A huge challenge in terms of corruption is to ensure sustainability in the supply chain. This relates to Goal 12 regarding responsible consumption and production. Many of the products that we consume are produced in low-income countries with high corruption risks and large sustainability issues in general. Just take a look at the label of the clothes that you're wearing right now and see where it's made. It's most likely not made in Sweden, and the same goes for food, technology, furniture, and so on. Corruption in the supply chain is closely linked to human rights abuses and environmental violations. One example is the fishing industry, where corruption causes severe human rights abuses, as well as overfishing of the seas. As you may know, such overfishing of the seas causes enormous negative climate impacts in the form of increased climate change and global warming. And this shows how corruption can also impact Goal 13 regarding climate action. It is clear that you need to also map and screen the supply chain based on the risk of corruption, in addition to risks in relation to human rights, labor rights, environment, and climate. It is obvious that action is needed to end corruption. But what can we do to improve the situation? Companies and other organizations can, for example, make sure to set the right tone from the top, map and screen the supply chain and the customers, conduct a risk assessment and establish clear guidelines based on their actual risks, educate the employees, establish a whistleblower system, and encourage a speak-up culture. But above all, it's about building an ethical culture every day. And we can do a lot as individuals as well. We can, for example, vote with our wallet by purchasing products and services only from transparent companies that can show that they conduct an effective work against corruption and for sustainable development. We can also raise awareness and take responsibility by using the whistleblower system in our organization. If you become aware of any corrupt practices within your organization, do blow the whistle. I want you all to remember that to achieve a sustainable development, we must end corruption. We need everybody to act, to say no to all forms of bribery and corruption, and to act when we come across any unethical behavior. Then, and only then, we can fight corruption. Thank you so much for listening and for taking action.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're diving into the world of corruption, right? And who better to tell us about corruption if not the people that know what they are talking about? So, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned, okay?
I have two passions in my life. Actually, I have three passions in my life. The first one is family. If I wouldn't mention that, my wife there would be very, very pissed off. But professionally, I have two passions in my life. Corruption, actually anti-corruption, and okay, anti-corruption and human rights. By applause, you're taking my time away, you know that? So, anti-corruption and human rights. It's quite weird how few people in the world work in those two fields at the same time. They are seen as very separate. One is a very, let's say, humanitarian, do-good thing. That's human rights. Corruption is, you know, being tough law enforcement, putting people in jail. Actually, they have everything in common. In my strong belief, they are the two biggest crimes against humanity, if you will. They are both crimes that can only be committed by powerful. They're crimes of abuse of power against the weakest. Economic power, state power, political power, social power. They both undermine the basic values that we subscribe to. Human dignity, social cohesion, social equality, democracy, and rule of law. I have worked on those two issues for international organizations, in law enforcement, for civil society as an activist. And in the last 3 years, as chairman, the chief commissioner of the Slovenian Commission for the Prevention of Corruption. In different countries, in different continents, I've seen my share of misery caused by corrupt and broken system of governance. I've seen firsthand results of corruption of despotic regimes in post-conflict environments. I've seen similar pictures that you've seen today that Arne showed you in real life. But I don't need to convince you that human rights violations and corruption exist in third world countries. No. I'm here today to speak about corruption here at home. But I don't mean Slovenia only. I mean Europe in general and Western Hemisphere in general. I'm going to speak how shadow elites, special interests, lack of transparency and integrity are undermining the rule of law and the democracy that we tend to believe in and we have written in our constitutions. Of course, corruption is a big part of every society. It's an intrinsic part of every society. Even every or most languages have a special slang word for it. Take a note on the one which, in a way, I like the most, and it's not known very well. The Japanese term for corruption is black mist. After all these years working in this area, I admit, even now I still get the goosebumps when I think about it, because it's a great description. Not like blue envelopes, black mists. It's deep, it's sinister, it's exactly what corruption is. Now, for decades, Western Europe, including Slovenia, held a moral high ground on corruption. That's something that happening, you know, in the countries where we saw photos from today. Asia, Africa, India, Latin America, and then, you know, the West, the Eastern bloc, not the one which is already part of the EU, but, you know, Russia, Ukraine, etc. We live in a society that we believe it's an orderly society. Every time when we are stopped by the traffic police officers, we are not expected to pay a bribe. Bribery is not necessary to get, at least not all the time, to get a health service, education. Most of our political leaders do not live in gold-plated mansions. Mostly they are not despotics. And their immediate family don't fly around in, you know, private jets and have offshore bank accounts with millions. There are exceptions to that rule, but nevertheless, Western world believes that we are better in that sense. So how is then that in the last 3 years, it's a little known number, but it's an important and credible number, that in the last 3 years, 70% of EU citizens believe that corruption is a major problem in their country. I'm talking about EU. And I'm talking about EU in general. Of course, the numbers are lower in Denmark, for example, where there is still over 20%, and they are higher in some countries. Over 70% of citizens in Europe believe that corruption is a major problem in their country. That number is very much in the neighborhood of a number that you will get or you get if you speak to people in India, if you speak to people in Russia, Central Asia, Latin Africa, Latin America, etc. So, one could easily dismiss, and many politicians and even some experts dismiss that number as a simple reaction to an economic and financial crisis of the last couple of years, which of course led to the increase of unemployment, social unrest, disintegration of public services, and people are angry. Okay, they're pissed off. And what is the best target? Politicians, bankers, etc. But I'm saying that the people are right. Annual costs of corruption in EU countries, and that is for the first time this year, it was estimated through serious research, is over 300 billion euros. Annual cost of corruption in European countries, EU member countries. Even the European Commission, not the bravest of organizations, has last year, for the first time in history, published and acknowledged that corruption is taking from 1.5 to 2% of the GDP. Financial sector bailout. We don't need, but nevertheless, I will repeat the numbers. Okay, they're not all European. You know, the Wall Street bailout went up over trillions of dollars. In comparison to that, our, you know, 4 billion euros to bail out Nova Ljubljanska Bank and Nova Kreditna Banka Maribor really, you know, looks like a small change. But how many individuals were held accountable for this? The question was rhetorical. It's a well-known criminological fact or observation that a regular criminal, for example, a robber who robs either, you know, okay, a bank, a post office, or an old lady on the street, can with this criminal act hope for a profit of approximately 1,000 or even less euros. By doing that, he or she, they're mostly he, the risk of going to jail to be caught, prosecuted, and convicted to jail time is over 35%. It depends on the country. Surprise, surprise. If you are engaged in financial or white-collar crime, the usual profit is over 1 million euros. And the risk of going to jail, even the risk of being prosecuted, is far below 1%. Those are the issues that can make an average, even an average European, angry. It's not only that people who commit corruption are not sent to jail. What you need to understand is that those 300 billion euros come from your pocket. You need to understand that bribery and corruption, not bribery, corruption is a serious issue in this part of the world. You don't need to convince any citizen of India, for example, that corruption is a problem there, or anybody in Africa that corruption is a problem there, because they're living it every day, because they cannot get public services if they don't pay bribes. We in Europe think about corruption very much like we think about global warming, or climate change. Many people, I guess, majority believes in it, but they don't want to think of it very much. They want somebody else to solve it. And the most they do is take a bike to work from time to time and do some home recycling and feel good. Well, very similar is with corruption. If we don't do anything, if we don't do something rather dramatic with environment, what are we leaving for our grandchildren? If we don't do anything about structural corruption in Western societies, what we are leaving for our democracy and the rule of law? So, is the answer of putting more people in jail? Is the answer of adopting even more laws to help people accountable and being put in jail? Yes, we desperately need more prosecution. We desperately need to improve our criminal justice system to be able to compete with the white-collar crime and corruption. But this itself, in itself, will not solve the problem. Because the problem of corruption in Europe, in general, and in Slovenia in particular, is not the problem only of bribery or individual criminality. But it is a question of structural and political corruption, driven by the lack of transparency and integrity. And of course, these are complex issues. So I beg you to listen and to think about it. Because people, we all like simplified solutions. We all like simplified solutions to complex problems. There are no simplified solutions when it comes to issues like structural corruption. We all want individualized guilt. We all want people to hang from the trees, to be guilty for all the ills in the society. Well, some should, but generally the problem is much more complex. And if I may to add to this, I cannot remember the number of times I was asked as the chief commissioner of the Anti-Corruption Commission, whenever the commission published a report outlining structural problems and proposing solutions for structural problems, and you were always asked, give us the names, give us the names. The paradox was that we were asked that question by politicians who created the environment for such structural projects, problems. It doesn't stop there. We were asked that by media and experts who were applauding often, not now, but before, the adoption of such measures because they were in collision with special interest and special funding, or they were just simply politically biased. And at the end of the day, we were asked that very often, or I was asked that very often, by citizens, by regular citizens, who are pissed off on their central government and the corruption in the central government, but every 5 years they go and vote for the same corrupt mayor. You see the paradox? I saw it. Mostly my interlocutors didn't. What is structural and political corruption? It's not bribery. We need to move away from bribery. That happens, but it happens little in Slovenia. We need to start bringing into our vocabulary, in our research, in our media, in our public discourse, not just the term corruption, which is generalized, but issues such as revolving door between business and policies, lack of transparency, conflict of interest, weak regulation of lobbying, lack of integrity, state capture by special interest, weak financial disclosures, political influence of management of state-owned enterprises. Those are complex issues, but those are the issues that drive political and structural corruption today in Western Europe. Because the most simple equation, get this, for corruption is, it's very simplified. People who really work like me in this field of corruption would say, man, this is you're really being populist here because this is an oversimplification. But nevertheless, corruption equals power minus accountability. Power. Government power, economic power, social power. It's quite logical. Power must be held in check by accountability. Because accountability reinforces the rule of law and reinforces integrity. But accountability doesn't come from the sky. Accountability, as it was said before, and that I'll not have time to go into that, but think about it, we don't even have a word in Slovenian for accountability. Actually, many other languages don't have a word for accountability. We interchange it with the word responsibility, which is different. Accountability, to hold somebody accountable for something, you need benchmarks. Accountable for what? You need to know what are his or her actions or inactions. You need to know what are the results of actions or inactions. If you want to help to help a politician accountable for his words, that's possible. You Google it and, you know, whatever. For his action or inaction, it's not so simple because you need to know what they're doing, who makes the decision, in what way the decisions are made. So, the cornerstone of accountability is not criminal law. It is transparency, in my firm belief, because transparency creates benchmarks for accountability. Now, people would say, that's great, because we live in the most transparent times in the history of mankind. You know, we have the internet. Every self-respecting country has a relatively good public access to public information law. And governments are rather open. You know, they have web pages, etc. My argument, not only my argument, is that transparency is an illusion. Transparency of power, and when I say power, transparency of governments and corporations today is an illusion. Who is the only, let's say, actor on the social scene that is the most transparent today? It's an individual. You and me are the most transparent stakeholders in the history of mankind. You as potential consumers, you as taxpayers, as potential suspects, as potential terrorists, or as user of social welfare. On the other hand, the government and the corporations are less transparent than they ever were. Transparency has increased, but the complexity of power has increased so dramatically that the gap is widened. I'm not going into the junk transparency, which has increased. Natasha nicely talked about it in the first. You know, we have a lot of junk transparency. It is very easy to find out what kind of shoes the Prime Minister wore, but you are not able to find out what are the PR firms, what are the consultancy firms or the legal offices that are being paid by, for example, state-owned enterprises. The bad news is, as I said, complexity is an enemy of transparency. And we live in one of the most complex social, legal, political, technological environment in the history of mankind. But there is a good news. The good news, we can overcome complexity by information technology. But not information technology just to type in, you know, to browse the YouTube for the funny pictures of the politicians, for the gaffes of public personalities, of the ones you want to hold accountable. No, you need information technology to create systemic analytical transparency tool focused on issues that matter. Financial flow between the public and the private, lobbying, conflict of interest, management of state-owned enterprises. On all those issues, we are less transparent than we ever were. At the Commission for the Prevention of Corruption, we have created such a tool. It's not a perfect tool, but we have created such a tool. It's called Supervisor. In very brief, many of you in this room knows about it. What is important about Supervisor is that it's basically an online tool available to any person. It's free of charge. It's highly accurate. It's daily updated. It bases its data on official databases combined with some databases from public sources. And basically, through it, you can follow every cent, every euro spent by public institutions. From the buying of, I don't know, a set of crayons in a public school somewhere in the outskirts of Slovenia to the buying of armed vehicles, of the Ministry of Defense and everything in between. You get my points very well. But I'm not here to sell the Supervisor, especially not because it says the time is up here. But I want to sell you an idea of the Supervisor. By the way, the Supervisor has generated 1.5 million clicks, individual searches in the first 24 hours of operation. That's huge for a country of 2 million. You are proud of it, but of course, a tool like Supervisor requires things that they were discussed today already. It requires active citizens and it requires quality media. And we all know that those are in big demand and in short supply, not only in Slovenia, but in Europe in general. And as a footnote to that, one of the first searches in Supervisor, which enables you to do really immensely complex stuff to see where your money is going, were like, who bought something in sex shop? You know, and those were like, seriously, those were one of the first queries, you know, in Supervisor. Now, Supervisor, like I said, I want to sell you the idea. The idea, which is included, and many people miss that, in its name. Supervisor was a name selected deliberately. It's a menacing name. It's like Big Brother is watching you. And you know, Big Brother is watching you all the time. Big Brother as the government, as the corporation. And they have tools to do it. And the government and the corporations have, for years, whenever they wanted to increase the power of surveillance of you, of me, as a citizen or as an employee, said, well, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. Cool. Let's turn that flashlight around. Let's provide the Big Brother tool, quote unquote, to an average citizen and to the media. Turn it back to corporations, turn it back to the government, and say, hey, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear in terms of lobbying, conflicts of interest, financial flow. So, to conclude, it's time for a new revolution, in my belief, in information technology, for transparency against structural and political corruption. Against my better judgment, I would always say that the battle or the struggle against structural corruption in the Western world, and that is the battle for democracy and the rule of law, will be fought not by police officers and idealistic good-doers only, but needs to be fought also by computer scientists and programmers to enhance transparency. Because we need that. We have definitely lost our moral high ground on corruption, the Western world. You're still better off with human rights. Human rights in Europe are still much, I mean, they're still okay in comparison to the other part of the world. But corruption, and what we are now exporting the problem. So, we need to do that. In the words of a famous Harvard law professor, turned anti-corruption fighter, Lawrence Lessig, to reclaim the republic from what? From black mist. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing, ladies and gentlemen? So we were talking about corruption, right? We're taking it up a notch tonight. We're talking about corruption, and mainly we're talking about Musnad. You know, we're talking about correctional facility. We're not throwing no shade or nothing. I'm just saying. So, what are the requirements? Or this was a requirement now for, is it the 5th of December 2025? Yeah, something like that. So the requirement is a grade 12 or grade 11 new curriculum equivalent. You must have at least 25 points in 6 subjects with an A symbol in English. And the applicant must be between the age of, the age from 19 to 35, be a Namibian citizen, allow his or her fingerprint to be taken to determine previous convictions, not have been convicted of any offenses or have a pending case under, schedule. Now, okay. So, what really rocks my boat here, right? What really rocks my boat here is that we are most now a reformed country. We are saying that the facility is not, right? It is not to punish people. It is to rehabilitate. But if we are rehabilitating, and we are confident of the rehabilitation that we are doing, then why can't we employ former convicts? Why isn't that, like, why? If we are saying that we are here to reform and we are here to rehabilitate, because we are saying was that we are saying that, unfortunately, right, people have done mistakes and they repent. And we are helping them fix. We are helping them, right, be better inaugurated into society. You know, taken back into society and be stand-up citizens of the society. But we will never be able to employ them. We don't want to employ them. Why? You must not be. Those are the requirements that are there, guys. And I'm not talking out of my head. I'm saying that this is what is written on the application form. The application forms, you must not be, eh? You must not be convicted of any offenses or have a pending case. So even if you are, so we're living in a world in Namibia that says you're innocent until proven guilty. Now, if you're innocent until proven guilty, why can't you apply for a job? Because they're saying that, whoa, you have a case that is still ongoing, so we can't. But does it not mean that we are most innocent until proven guilty? You know, I'm still going to court for that thing. Yeah. I'm still going to court for that thing. And I'm still innocent until proven guilty. So what's the problem? Why can't I apply for a job here at Correctional? Why? The number in studio is 083-288-401. I guess that I missed one of the calls, but please do call in and let's have a conversation about this, right? So we are saying that we are rehabilitating people. We're saying that we want people to be taken back into society and to thrive in society. But we are not willing to ever in our life, ever, ever, no matter how good they have been, no matter how outstanding, no matter how petty their crime has been, no matter how small it has been, no matter how big it is, we will never employ them ever. Nande tu. Never. But you are telling us that we as the general public, we must employ them. Ex-convicts. We must employ them. Ex-inmates. We must employ them. But you even, the facility that has put it upon themselves to say that we are rehabilitating us. We are rehabilitating and we are bringing, we are rehabilitating and we are trying to bring these people back into society. Into society as we know it. You guys are not even willing to take the chance on your own products. Now, if you don't wear your own cream, how are we supposed to trust your cream? You were now, you are saying, no, guys, give them a chance. But you are not giving them a chance, correctional facility. You are not giving inmates a chance. You are not giving ex-convicts a chance. So ex-convicts are rehabilitated by you guys and pushed out into society. And if they meet the criteria, say somebody is now 22 years old, right? And they were maybe convicted of stealing, for example. And then they did their 2 years, 1 year. And they meet the criteria, except that one. We cannot make provisions. Especially if you yourself, you know their behavior as inmates, right? You know their behavior. Now, why must we trust the convicts then? Why must we employ them? If you guys can't even employ them. Correctional. You guys can't employ your own people that you guys rehabilitated. Because, for example, at a rehabilitation center, especially these rehabilitation centers that are, what do you call it, self-catering or, you know, that deal with hand work and stuff like that. What usually happens is that some of the addicts or the patients that go there might not actually want to go back into society or might not want to go back into the societies in which they came from. Right? So, there's always an option to stay and work at the rehabilitation. To stay and work at the rehabilitation is to be the foreman or to build or to do cupboards or to do whatever, you know? In some places, they do have those options, you know, where you guys are just working while you're working on yourselves to rehabilitate. And yet, correctional facilities not. They are not taking in convicts, Chomi. They are not. We don't want them. Now, who is supposed to want them if you people that rehabilitated them? Not unless you don't believe in your own rehabilitation. Not unless you don't believe that you guys are actually doing a good job there. Not unless you guys are just locking up people in cages, and there's no extramural activities to rehabilitate the people. There's no rehabilitation that's happening there. It's just a jail or a prison or whatever you call it. It's just a cell. Not unless that's what's happening. If that's what's happening, then okay, cool. We understand why you also don't want them. But then, now, you must now stop wasting taxpayers' money, most. Because now taxpayers, we are most paying for blankets. We are paying for food for our inmates, you know, because we are under the notion that this is a rehabilitation facility. We are under the notion that they are rehabilitating our rotten apples, and they are bringing them back to life, you know. They are bringing them back into the societies. But if you're telling me that you cannot employ your own product, then we also don't want your product, Moose. And I think that is an argument that is worth having. It's an argument worth having. I think it's an argument that should be brought up. Because, I mean, we care. So you are saying, no. You must not be in the system as an inmate. No, you must not have a criminal history. But you guys specifically deal with these people. Specifically deal with these people. We would understand if the police had the same protocol, if NDF had the same protocol, or this protocol. We would understand. Because they don't deal with rehabilitating. They deal with capturing suspects and making sure that we are transporting the suspects to go and get a fair trial. We make sure that their rights are not obstructed. We make sure that we apprehend the suspect. And it's not the criminal, it is the suspect. Because they are innocent until proven guilty. And that is what the law says. We are innocent until proven guilty. And somebody must prove us guilty. So prior to that, we're just people that are in the wrong place at the wrong time. Even if you found me with it, we still have to go to the court of law. We still have to go and prove that, okay, this is what happened and this is how it went down and this person is guilty or not guilty. I understand if the police doesn't want them. I understand if NDF doesn't want them. I understand if other government facilities don't want them. But you, Wena, that is in the business of rehabilitating our people, why don't you want them? No, because they're not allowed to be a government employees. Why are they not allowed to be government employees? You guys done rehabilitated them. That's like you saying, Kucha, oh, I'm going to raise my child, but I don't want to live. I'm going to raise this child, and then I never want to live with this child alone again. Doesn't make sense, Moss. Not unless you're not raising the child properly, and the child has bad manners, and the child is just a terrorist. That's what you're saying. But then you guys are saying that the rest of us, the community, we must trust them. But you guys don't trust them. You don't trust your own people that you are rehabilitating. Your own people that you are working on, you don't trust them. But us, we must trust them because we are better than you guys are. And you guys are even government. You guys actually have the capacity. You know? You guys are looking for 200 people. Take 50 inmates. Okay. Why are you saying that inmates are bad? Is that what you're telling us? Are you telling us that we must run away from inmates? Is that what you're saying? Because if it's 200 posts and we have such a high unemployment rate, do you think that some of the people that are unemployed are not ex-convicts or ex-inmates? They are part of the margin of unemployment. But now they can't apply for a job with you guys because you guys don't want them. But yet you are the ones that changed their lives. You guys are the ones that rehabilitated them. So you say. Because you don't want to be a correctional facility, you guys want to be. Yeah, and even when we say correctional, we are correcting. We are correcting. We are not crucifying. We are not condemning. We are correcting. Correcting is similar to rehabilitation. Because it's a rehabilitation facility, basically. For inmates and convicts, most. And okay, so they don't want them. Alright? And yet, we as SMEs, we as the rest of the people, we as public sector, private sector, we are now supposed to take in the people that they don't want to take. And they recruit more people than private companies, guys. If you guys can recruit 200 people, poshkando, like yay. Like, yo, the day I can recruit 200 people, poshkando, ne? Oshiri. Like, I will thank my maker 5,000 times. I'll thank my maker. Do you know why I'll thank my maker? I thank my maker because which I made it. I made it to a level, ne? A level that is a level. Mokupotoshiri, a level. Monangi. I would have made it to a great level. Isn't it? Right? So, you guys have more capacity. I'm just saying. Today's like one of those days where we are like, a little bit of venting here and there, a little bit of, we're just throwing out challenges outside. Okay. So, and the applicants must not have visible tattoos on their bodies when wearing the correctional services uniform. Okay. You must not have visible, right, tattoos when wearing the correctional correctional services uniform. So now my question is, how will you know? So if I have a tattoo on my body, just some way on my body, right? Like, I'm so pressed. I was reading through these things. I'm so pressed there. I'm like, I don't know, man. Okay, when wearing the uniform. So prior to me getting to correctional facility, I don't know how the uniform would look on me. So how will I know? Or do you guys have a system that you guys identify? Because I feel like all of these criteria that they are putting here, all of these bullet points that they are putting here, is just to discourage people. Like, in all honesty, it's just to discourage you from actually applying. Because now you have a tattoo and you're like, oh, hi, they will not, because the correctional facility uniform, what. Like, hey, chummy, there are also long sleeves. Don't be discouraged to apply. There's also long sleeves. You can wear long sleeves for the whole year if you want. Eh? There are also long sleeves, and there are also, combat uniform. You can wear combat the whole year. How? Don't be discouraged. Apply. Don't be discouraged. Apply. Because, I mean, what does it mean? I've never tried on a correctional uniform. How will I know if my tattoo will fit, will pass which uniform are they talking about? Like, are they talking about the long sleeve one, the combat one, the skirt? They are talking about the formal one. Which uniform are they talking about? Because I feel like all of these things that are put out here are just to discourage you from applying. So now you go and read it and you're like a 20-year-old and you're like, yeah, but I've got a tattoo on my arm. So maybe it's over the uniform. I'm not going to apply. And I think that these things are deliberately done. The vagueness, right? The vagueness is deliberately done. The omission is, it's deliberate. I feel like it's very deliberate. The vagueness in these bullet points are very, very, very deliberate. All right. And the next bullet point is the applicant must be free from mental health or physical defects. You're being called a defect by an institution of the government of your country. If you have a physical something, if you have a mental something, you are defected, okay? You are a defect. So you are a reject. And this is absolutely, absolutely normal business to put out there. Because, I mean, it's correction almost. Like, yeah. Okay. So you must be free, ne? Must be free of mental or physical defects. So now, one would think now, especially in the mental health facility, there are so many things that are mental health related. You could have tension. You could have trauma. You could have bipolar. You could have depression. You could have schizophrenia. You could have borderline personality disorder. You could have anything, right? And do you have to disclose this? Because you're going to go for a medical most. So, like, that is the grounds in which I'm saying, Kucha, this HIV status of Nandi Tume versus Minister of Defense. I think it's just because many of us are too busy doing other things that we're not actually focused on the big cakes. Many of us are not actually focused on these things, right? And I feel like if somebody challenged this, right? And I know that there are policies and sub-articles and, but nothing is clear. Nothing is clear. So the vagueness in itself is what discourages many people. You are so discouraged because there you are thinking about, oh, me, I'm on medication for depression. I'm not going to apply because that's a mental defect, Moss. Especially if you don't understand your mental disability or your mental disorder or your mental illness or your mental crisis that you're having. Especially if you don't understand it, eh? You go and call yourself a defect because the application says defects. So The applicant must be free from mental and physical defects, disease or infirmity, which will likely interfere with the proper execution of duties. So, the proper execution of duties and all of this, you know. Now, you know, was it not 2 weeks ago that a correctional officer went to work and killed himself at the job with a service pistol? Was it not?
Save so much more in 2026 at WB. Get 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT milk for $19.99. 1 kg Top Score Instant Maize for only $23.99. 500 gram Bacomo Cornflakes for only $29.99. And 8 Twin Saver 300 sheet 1-ply toilet rolls for only $33.99. See more January specials at Wurmanbrock.com. We care.
Well, about gents, but say jealous, nah, book and the vet lane, what's that? Let's continue. So, basically you must not have any of these things, right? That might interfere with your execution of your duties, right? Okay. Now, we can, I don't know, the more I'm doing this, the more angry I'm becoming. Like, I guess I'm just feeling all kinds of anger today. Okay, so how will you know? So, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, right? 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, one of the, I don't know, is it officers? You call them officers, most. Yeah. I don't know what you guys call them in correctional, but yeah, one of their employees. Right? One of the correctional officers goes to work in the morning. He goes to work, he checks in, he does his thing and all of that. And then I think, if it's not in the morning, it's in the afternoon. But then when it was checkout time, you must give in your service pistol or your service weapon. Right? You must give it in. You must sign it out and sign it in. Because you are not everybody's at liberty of walking around with their pistols or their guns, because how this is something, it's a correctional facility. It's a rehabilitation center for our inmates. We just use the gun for control in case somebody gets out of hand or in case somebody is very dangerous and violent. This gentleman, right, takes his service pistol. Why do I keep saying pistol? I don't know what it's called. Pistol gun. He takes his service gun and he commits suicide at the Omaruru base. Not the base, but Omaruru facility. At work. With a service gun. Does it. At work. Now, when people put up posts like, be free from mental or physical defects, right? What exactly do they mean? Because I can be suffering from depression. I get my job nicely, but my depression is not going away. And then I go to work. And then I just go and off myself at work. Right? But yet you guys said that you guys are not employing people with mental defects. Now, what is a mental defect? Mental defect, is it things like Down syndrome? Is it visible? Or is it mental, psychological? What is it? Because the vagueness in these applications, or the vagueness in these posts, right? Or vacancies. The vagueness in it is very discouraging for human beings. It's very discouraging for citizens. Because If you are reading this and you have depression, for example, and you are diagnosed and you're on medication, if you're an honest person, you'll be like, ah, no, I can't go. Why? Because I have most a mental defect. What's wrong? I have depression, most. You know, major depression, most. You say things like that and then you won't apply for your job. Or maybe you function pretty well, but there's one finger that is missing, or half a finger that is missing, but it has not stopped you from anything. And you are automatically disqualified because you don't have all five of your fingers, all 10 of your fingers. Is that what it means? And I'm asking these questions not because I know the facts. I'm asking because I'm reading the document and I'm asking real and genuine questions. And I think that these questions are questions that the Namibians also have. And if you haven't thought about it, then here's food for thought, right? Because I think that there's so much vagueness in all these vacancies, vagueness that you might not fully understand. Now, even if you call these people's offices, their phones ring and 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 nobody picks up. It seems like no one works there. So that you can ask, if I have only 9 fingers, can I also apply? But if I have 11 fingers, can I also apply? If I can, then you have such questions, most, because there's no way you're going to understand. And how would you know what your duties would be? Don't they have different sections in correctional facility? Don't they have like, oh, this one does this, and 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 this one does this. Maybe it's still coming up in the rest of the document, but how would you know that you wouldn't be able to execute your duties correctly? How would you know? And also, if you are mentally challenged, right? How would you know not to apply? Okay. And the next one is, the applicant must be willing to submit his or her, himself or herself for a comprehensive medical checkup, which also includes physical exams. You must be. Okay. That one we kind of understand, because you guys are going to be running. And it doesn't mean that you guys are going to always be running, but when running comes, that's why you have step out and you have combat, you know? That's when running comes, you can, you know? It's not like the aunties that are now sitting at desks and their skirts have been altered so much because they announced that it's 48 and you didn't even know that the 40s get to 8, but okay. And you know, the top is about to explode. The young recruits, I think that you guys are doing a killer job. You guys are wonderful. You guys are beautiful in your uniforms. I feel like you guys are fire in your uniforms. You guys are, oh wow. The only ones I'm not feeling is the police. Like, I don't understand their uniforms. Is it beige or gray or is it blue? It's just not attractive. It's not giving. It's not giving vibes upon vibes. But correctional uniform is giving vibes. Okay. Vibes. And they haven't done anything with you, Mumon. So don't be like, and us, no, I don't see you guys with your uniforms, only in bank queues. You guys are dudes, but okay. So you guys must be willing and be prepared to undergo written and physical tests. Written and physical tests. So be prepared. And I think that that is why, right? That is why we put you at the IQ of a grade 12 or a grade 11 new curriculum. I think for those particular reasons, because they are also going to be written exams. And if you have grade 12 and you have grade 11 new curriculum, then it would be most likely for you to pass, because then you have also obtained. You have been reading for 12 years, 11 years, you got this. That is why most probably that those are the requirements. And that would also leave us now, Okocha. Those are the requirements according to IQ. I don't know, man. Okay. So, The applicant must obtain a certificate of conduct once selected to undergo the basic training course. Okay. The applicant must be prepared to be deployed to at any correctional institution in Namibia. That is what you must be prepared to do. So in case you've never heard of what is said in that form, then here I am, your mom. I'm coming to tell you about what's in the form, right? So former correctional officers should have a clean record and attach a motivational letter and basic training certificate. The age limit is 45 years of age. Allow his or her fingerprint to be taken to determine previous convictions, because we don't like convicts. Not have been convicted of any offense or have a pending case under schedule one. Not have visible tattoos and on their bodies when wearing the correctional service uniform. Must be prepared to be appointed as a correctional officer. One CO, is it COD or CO1? All right. So that is it with those ones. Now we're moving on to the second page, right? And the second page in itself is also a tough one, because we are reading most. And be free from mental or physical defects, diseases, basically the same requirements. And then we go into the responsibilities, right? The responsibilities are controlling and monitoring offender movements within assigned work areas, offender movements, you know. Conducting formal and informal head counts of offenders to ensure that each offender is present. Monitoring conduct of offenders in institution or during work or recreational activities according to established policies, regulations, and procedures to prevent escape or violence. Okay. So these are the responsibilities. These are the responsibilities. So the responsibilities are many, but we're going to keep going, right? The next one is inspect conditions of locks, windows, bars, grills, doors, and gates at correctional institution to ensure security and help prevent escape. All right. Recording information such as offender identification, charges, and incidents of offender disturbance, and keeping daily records of offender activities. Searching offenders and vehicles and conducting shakedowns of cells for valuables and contraband such as weapons or drugs. Inspecting incoming items for the presence of prohibited articles. Escorting offenders within the confines of the institution or outside of the institution. Conducting grounds to be observed behavior and mood of offenders and reporting notable incidents of sudden or unusual changes. I think that's beautiful, where they are monitoring your behavior to see which I know there are unusual changes within offender number 656. his behavior is off. Okay. Responding to emergency situations by participating as a member of the institution emergency response team and or otherwise responding to emergency situations as they arise, providing direction to inmates with respect to scheduled rules and behavioral requirements, responding to offender requests, concerns, and or complaints within the scope of the position as defined by the standing operating procedures, maintaining up to date and accurate written routine records and reports on offenders' movements, counts, search, offender behavior, property records, logs, etc.
Rande soli evulio mponga sana. Pora keneni matungi mwa Namibia mwono mkunda doko mambo. Elie divi soli omulio kutundira kwa ministeri unandima, maruno nege mefuta, memane wapo kororevu. Pora keneni na wano kulitamba ya kambudiezi kumono wane koroveni, kama parambo na waka umi. Hagekeni suruga na sokura ndesa nokura nda evulio mponga sana. Morwa singe, morwa evule mponga sana mwana Namibia evule pangero, kani kwa to kulirandesa monkedi nkeni. Kulihame sila masuruga aso kurandesa ndi kuranda evu, kapi ya polisira. Weta ze wapo kuru evu, ndio mkunda, heziwa na kutumburasi act number 5 of 2002 kwa silika hivi ya ukayangosna. Matenge kogo iruga na vapira kupolisira ya randesu evu. Matenge kogo paveta, vadonga nesiveta angava futisa, taningava za modorongo. Edonga neso lompora momkunda. Rande sondi erando evu kuvura kulete sapo mapiro kulizuva ndi marwa nambo monomkunda detu. Yinke yono hepak diva. Evu lomponga sanora natuwenye. Aloru none lokuli gavera ornat guane namo natuwenye mawa. Tupungureni upingwa wetu. Pokufuma deka evu lomponga sano. Ose kufuma deka mulio konompo detu kani popera nkara pamozitu. Rapotai via ukayapira kupulisira. Nsena sowe kuna Gaza rasi, kuna karapo, hiruga na irande soevu, hirapota kundango zorudi, ndango zevulio mponga sano, ndiko mbere wazo ministeri, hozakara pepi nevango lyoge. Turuga nene kumwe, tukungeru none revulio tulio mponga sano, tulikungire mhoko kukome. Uministeri kapna ukakara na unzoni, sena natukazumba nesa marunone gevu, mora hiruga na dona irande soevulio mponga sano. Diorokasi, evulio mponga sano mulio unini, tulipopere ni nukuli pungwira na vini. Mpandu keruga neno kumu. Edivi sweli, lioko radio, kunali tulisa pone kwato sokole pasmali wa tunde la kepangero losurongo sana Namibia, tani epangero la Germany, Pitera mo German Development Bank. Mwagwana kwa mapuku rogomanzi, guwanekerano mbere wazo ministeri za karela pepi, ni wango lioge, ndiko mbere wazo inka yonkara pamwe mo ministeri unandima, marino nege mefuta, memane wapo kuroevu, kono moraezi. Eutan tazimwe zimwe, mbali eutan tantatu, tambali ntazimwe eutani.
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chumbi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! Mm. I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Hello. Eagle FM, the I. The number in studio is 0832-888-401. Okay, so those are the requirements, right? And this is nice, you know. I like it. Key responsibilities. So they do give you key responsibilities, right? And I'm guessing, right now, because we're going through the document together, right? I'm guessing that most probably the tattoos are also a safety thing. And maybe you must just measure with a school shirt or whatever. I don't know, but you wouldn't know unless you try on the uniform until, you know, like, but who's going to give you their uniform to try on so that you see if the tattoo is coming out or not? Anyways, discrimination. Yeah, I'm just here for discrimination. Okay. All right. And providing accurate verbal written situation reports related to offender behavior in the unit and during community escort. So they must see, must now, you were not nice. And when you were being escorted, you were very jitty and you were very white and you were very white. Because this is a rehabilitation center where, you know, we are supposed to rehabilitate our people. Because I know the person was fine and the person went to the hospital. Because I see a lot of offenders that are taken to the hospitals and stuff like that. And yeah, okay, correctional. Okay. And skills and abilities, right? Good written and oral communication skills. High level of maturity and demonstrated life skills. High standard of interpersonal skills. Competency in basic computer skills. Ability to successfully pass all stages of the requirement process. So that you must have those skills and abilities, right? And recruitment process. This is the recruitment process, right? Successful candidates will be appointed as recruits, undergo 9 months basic training or sometimes 3 months basic training, depending on which one you're applying for, because sometimes they also do need lawyers, they also do need social workers, they also do need psychologists, they also do need psychiatrists, they need all of that. So it depends now on which one you're applying for. But if this is just basic, it's 9 months basic training. At the Correctional Service Training College in Omaruru. So basically most of you guys get trained in Omaruru. And after successful completion of the training, will be appointed as a correctional officer. One, applicants must note that their appointments are subject to positive outcomes of security vetting, qualification, verification, medical, fitness, and criminal record checks, and experience confirmation where applicable. NB, applicants should indicate their constituencies and regions on the first page of the application for employment form before submitting them to the address provided below. Individuals who meet these requirements should submit their applications for employment, application for employment form. Form 156043 and 156094, obtainable at all government offices. accompanied by a detailed CV, certified copies of qualifications, Namibian identity documents, evaluation of qualifications letter from NQA, and all necessary supporting documents to the nearest correctional facility institution. In Windhoek, applications for employment forms should be hand-delivered at Windhoek Correctional Facility or at the Namibian Correctional Services National Headquarters, Brendan Simwea Square. Brendan Simwea Square. Hotha Street, Block A, ground floor. Okay? Mailed applications for employment forms should be forwarded to the Commissioner General, Namibian Correctional Services, private bag 13281, Windhoek. Attention, Human Resource Management. Only shortlisted candidates will be contacted. No documents will be returned. Applications should reach the office on or before the 5th of January 2026. No late applications will be considered. Any inquiries, contact Human Resource. Then they give the telephone numbers. And then advertising date is the 5th of December 2025. And closing date is the 5th of January 2026. Right? So that was it. That is the application. So the reason I'm going through this application is so that nobody can say that, aye, but Maitri Akave, no. Whatever. Which I am Maitri Akave, you didn't even read through the application. You don't know what you're talking about. So now we go back to the spice and to the juice and to the controversy that is happening. So can someone be a correctional facility officer in Namibia with a grade 9? Now that is the question, because all of us are so pressed. All of us are so pressed. We are pressed because of her father. We are pressed because she's grade 9. We are pressed because she has a job. We are pressed because you guys are sitting with your degrees and you didn't make the cut. They just send you that. We regret to inform you. Or sometimes they just keep quiet. And this is what is said, right? Can somebody? In Namibia, the normal minimum educational requirement to be appointed as a correctional facility officer with the Namibian Correctional Services, NCS, is at least grade 12 certificate or a grade 11 certificate under the new curriculum, which with sufficient points, which is 25 points in 6 subjects with an E in English. That is the requirement. So here's what it means for somebody that only has a grade 9. Official standard entry requirement for the general NCS recruit program, right? The published minimum is grade 11 or grade 12 with specific subjects and points required. These requirements are typically set in official recruitment adverts and government job circular. Okay? Now, okay, so let's get now to our case. Our case is the exception. Because now we are pressed as a nation. Kuchaye, unona wa kengeri, unona of high officials, high ranking officials, unona, you guys remember most the Pohambers and the Tonys and, the Mbaevers and, those ones, yeah? The elite kids, Elizabeth got a job at Eagle FM because her father is a prominent person. Yes. So let's just go into what Uncle Rafi is saying. Now me, my problem is not that it happened. My problem is that there's an omission. You guys don't tell us that there are exceptions. Hey, hey, you guys don't tell us, you guys make exceptions for some. You guys don't tell us, but even if ne, you are having nine fingers, you can still apply, and you know, we will consider, especially if you go through the training successfully, you will consider, you know, because it's a lot of money to train somebody, guys. For 9 months. For 9 months, they are eating. They have uniform. They have beds. They have a whole protected facility. How? It's a long time. Yeah? It's a lot of taxpayers' money. There have been public discussions and reports about individuals being appointed with lower formal schooling. The correctional service itself stated that in that instance, the person met alternate criteria such as vocational qualifications. Now, Philip, why don't we say on our application form, because we read through the application form, there's nothing here that says, even if you don't have a grade 11 or a grade 12, you can apply if you're having VTC or if you're having VTC or you're having what. The application is specific. The application is direct. And that's why I say it is in the vagueness that we find great offense, because the application is very vague. The application seems to be very, the advertisement in itself seems to be very direct. It seems to, I know what I want. And these are my standards. These are my requirements. You cannot breach this. We are going to throw your CV out if you breach any of these things. Right? This is exactly what I'm reading. Because, Mina, the first thing that I'm getting is like, yay, grade 12. What is that? That's the first thing. Requirements. The first thing that they want is a grade 12 certificate. They grade 12 certificate or a grade 11 new curriculum certificate. With an equivalence of 25 points in 6 subjects and an E symbol in English. So I don't know now why we are E symboling in English if we also have to have comprehensive written reports. That's why the police station is also having issues with spelling out our cases. Now our cases are just mumbo jumbo because the person doesn't know how to spell most things. But okay, we give everyone a chance. So it says here that they can, if people have met, alternative criterias. Now, why is this alternative criteria not awarded to our brothers and sisters that have alternative criterias? Which are, you dropped out in grade 4, but then you have been a carpenter all your life. And then you went to, somebody smuggled you in, Somebody smuggled you in, or you went with a piece, whatever, or one of these trainings, right? And somebody trained you how to do carpentry. And maybe you got like a young certificate there. Like, why don't they say that? So that it gives everybody hope. Why are they discriminating, guys? Like, me, I call it straight discrimination. Because I feel like it's an omission on their application forms or their adverts. It's an omission deliberately made so that there is a loophole within the system. So that this loophole, right, can benefit whoever they want to benefit. So they most probably tell relatives, Kucha, you must just apply with your VTC. You must apply with your watch. You must apply with your watch. But they're not telling the general public. So now we are having a gang of people that are unemployed and they have the papers. They have the VTCs. They have the healthcare certificates. They have all of these certificates, right? And they have all these certificates, but they can't apply because they are stopped with their requirements. The first thing on that page is the requirement of grade 12 and grade 11. Now, if you didn't go up until there, Mara, you decided kuja school was not for me. I'm going to go and do a course at Chardonnay. I'm going to do a course at Fairies. I'm going to do a course at Who's Beauty School. I'm going to do a course on what. And you excel. You go and work in a salon. You go and work in somebody's butchery. You go and work as a carpenter. You've had 20 years of experience. Maybe not 20. Let's make it 10, Mar, because age day is also a thing. Kama, you must be like from 19 to 35. So let's say for 10 years, you know, ever since you're 25, you've been working as a handlanger. You know, a builder, you are into construction. That's what you do. And you got a paper, you have a recommendation or a testimonial. Eh? Or your clock-ins are clocking in. But they don't indicate this on the applications. So you are never going to apply because they don't indicate that you can also, you also with your VTC, with your vocational qualification, you can also apply. Okay? They don't say that. They hit you with that grade 12 and you must have 20 points and you must have what and you must not be what and you must not be what. But they are not telling you the things that you actually need to hear in order for you to actually have a fighting chance. And that's my problem. My problem is that we are not giving our people fighting chance. The fighting chance is only awarded to some. And who makes the criteria? Who makes the cut to be part of the squad that's getting provisions? My problem with Uncle Rafi is not that it is not correct. My problem with Uncle Rafi is that he is not making it mandatory, right? To indicate all of these things so he has people of substance under his unit or in his instructions, under his department. Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is the number in studio. My problem is that one. Because, Vele, if on that application, Chomi, if on that application there was a clause that said also, if you have vocational qualifications, you can also apply. Because it's not every day that we get the matriarch to read you the whole entire application. It's not every day. So what if you are told there by your auntie that's in window, kuchantuko correctional or ta kutu, marangueto, ito vuku ya koshashota pro grade 11 and no, new curriculum and grade 12. Ina shangasha ne yo VTC yo njiwaya. Ina shangasha ne yo healthcare njiwaya. Ina shangasha yo first aider njiwaninga. Ina shangasha ni manjo njiwaninga. So you don't qualify automatically. And of course you would believe it. You'd believe it because people that are in positions to tell you these things are not. They are not telling you these things. They are making provisions for whoever they are making provisions for. And that is what ruffles my feathers. That is what riles me up. My problem is not that she got a job. My problem is not that it is her father. My problem is the omission from the correctional services. The omission of all this information. And had we not had a whistleblower that whistled and blew, kucha, this person only has a grade 9, would it have been an issue that we are bringing onto the table? Would it have? Or would it have been an issue that is still just under here? Under reps. We are all the same. We are all wearing our school, our work uniform. We are all just getting the same salary. We are all just on the same together. Because I would understand, because she has most hairdressing, right? Experience and a qualification, and she also has healthcare. I would absolutely understand if she made it on those grounds, right? Because it would be nice, because also we have to remember that correctional facility is correctional. It is not condemning. It is not execution. It is correctional. We, correctional, are trying to correct your behavior so that we can make you fit for society. AKA rehabilitation. right? So for us to look for people from all walks of the earth to come and occupy spaces within correctional services is absolutely mandatory. So we need a plumber, right? We need a plumber to come and teach these people plumbing. We need, so that when they come out of there, they know how to go and plumb, so that they can look for bread. Because the idea is, we are rehabilitating you to fit into the environment and into the society. That's what we are doing, right? That is why you guys can have all that the ninja coming to unclog drains and all of that, because they are plumbers, right? And they have these qualifications. It would be absolutely logical for us to have lawyers that are maybe also teaching law there in the correctional facility. It would be absolutely psychologically brilliant to have psychologists and psychiatrists and social workers there in the facility to deal with the inmates' issues and psychological well-being. It would be absolutely logical for us to have people that have certificates in caregiving, because they are inmates that go, it's inmates, right? It's inmates. Yeah. Inmates that go into the system pregnant. You know, we need midwives. You know, we need midwives. We need people that know how to care for children. We need educate, because children stay with their parents. Children stay with their mothers inside the facility until they turn. Is it not? I'm speaking under correction here, but it's either 2 years old or 3 years old. Because, after a certain point, the child starts to see and to notice and to evaluate the environment. And then it also, to some degree, becomes a little bit dangerous, because we are dealing with people that need to be rehabilitated for crimes that they have committed. Right? So somebody might have an aggressive behavior. Somebody might have had a mental breakdown, but still needs to be convicted for their crimes. Because of the people that are there, there are certain stages of a child's life that has to move. But from the beginning of the child's life, right, this child still has to be taken care of up until the child is a specific age, which is 2 or 3, if I'm not mistaken. Then they have to be given to a family member to take care of the child, or if not a family member, the child now goes into the system. And the system is the foster system. The system is the system where either they go to a home of some sort, or they get adopted by a family, but our adoption process is extremely long. I don't know. And, or they go and live in a state facility that is also just for children, that also needs others, you know, like needs other kinds of professionals to live there, caretakers and stuff. So we understand that these are necessities for the type of work that you are doing. But don't you think that nurses that are not having jobs, right, would also apply and also help and assist, so that you guys have your own hospital, so that you guys are not taking people to state hospitals so that they escape, yeah, under your watch. If we make it clear, if it's not just these great 10 and great things, you know, yeah, but if they are nurses, they can also apply. But I want to know that if I'm going to become a correctional officer, I'm also going to be doing the job that I love. You know, I'm going to be a nurse at correctional facility, please. You know, I'm going to be a doctor at correctional facility. I'm not going to be an officer. You know, a correctional officer. No, I'm going to be a doctor at correctional services. I'm going to be a nurse at correctional services. I'm going to be a what? But the way that the it's not application, man. It's the advert. The way the advert is structured, it's structured in such a way that it might actually represent nepotism and corruption. It is so omitting that I think that we're getting the shorter end of the stick. We the public, right? So we were at the correctional services itself stated that in this instance, in that instance, the person met alternative criteria such as vocational qualifications that they don't tell us about, healthcare certificate, or relevant experience. So you and your relevant experience, Chomi, you and your relevant experience. You are not applying because you only have a grade 8, but ever since grade 8, you have been working in a nursing home. You have been working with dementia patients. You have been working, you have just been working as an assistant, right? At a rehabilitation center, for example. You know, relevant experience. Which I know you have been a plumber for 20 years and people can vouch for you. You've been a carpenter for 20 years. You have been a landmower for 20 years, a landscaper for 20 years. You are not going to apply because you are scared of. So, relevant experience and past assessment rather than being hired strictly based on a grade 9 education. So we wouldn't strictly employ you with your grade 9, but we would make provisions for you if you have vocational qualifications, if you have healthcare qualifications or relevant experience, then we would make a provision for you. But that is also something that is also not stipulated. Something that is not put out there. Which are, oh no, yeah. You can apply as long as you got this. Like, yeah, no. You can apply. You can apply. Nobody's telling you this, and that's why you are just sitting there in the dark with your grade 8 and your gang of experience. What that means for you, typically you cannot become a standard correctional officer in Namibia with only grade 9 because the official recruitment criteria requires at least grade 11 or grade 12. However, there may be rare special recruitment streams or appointments based on other qualifications like vocational or TVET certificates, experience, or specific roles, subject to what the NCS advertises. In such cases, the service can decide eligibility based on the advertised criteria. But these are not the general rules. You got it? These are not the general rules. So summary, qualification, grade 9 only to be unsuccessful. Usually no, does not meet the standard of entry. Grade 11 and grade 12, yes, meets typical minimum requirement. Vocational experience, possibly if specifically allowed in a special advertised role. So it must be specifically advertised. We are looking for hairdressers. Now, the problem is that me, I cannot find that one. I'm looking for the one that says we are looking for hairdressers. We are looking for hairdressers because also our salons would be most now empty. Because how? Jina hai longa ko correctional. Eh, ngirota kongwa antwa panda omkwaikara. Jina ina harane ironga ko correctional andrane. And the tatukara tukwata 1.55 to kosh pundishe tu mo salona manga and tuta kwata 9,000 and 10,000 that we are correctional. They are tuimuata tu panda. Everybody wants that. But they are not specific, right? And it's that omission that riles me up to some degree. So, So that's the conversation that I'm having today. If you'd like to join me, the number in studio is 083-288-401. If you have your 2 cents about this matter, please do call in. The number is 083-288-401. We're basically talking about the issue that has been circulating the internet and the fact that, yeah, we're internet specialists. Mara, we're not really doing our research. So I find the application in itself very discriminatory. I also find it very, I find it very weird, and I find it having a lot of loopholes and omissions, right? And I don't know who, I don't know what intelligent person, right, writes these posts. Not posts, but yeah, writes these advertisements. Ministry of Home Affairs, Immigration, Safety and Security. I don't know who wrote this and put their stamp there. Mara, I think that it's something that's worth scrutinizing. Because I see a lot of discrimination. Not unless, right, we're going to go into the policies and we're going to go into the clause and we're going to go into everything else that is out there that defends this. Mara, how can you put out something half? How is the general public going to do, does the general public have access to all these policies and all of this that you have to check? And how would we know we would have to check for something if we don't even know that we actually can apply without grade 12, grade 11? How? Now, I'm having 9 fingers because I was involved in a butchery incident and now I have 9 fingers. But I'm a hard worker and I can work. Does that count as a disability defect? And also, now what happens to your employees that are already there and then they go through this? Do we fire them when they become disabled? Do we fire them when they are mentally unfit and unstable? Do we fire them or what? Because you don't want most these kinds of people. But what if they are already in your system? Do we fire them? Which are, whoa, 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 you went crazy. You went crazy and you know we don't like crazy. So you are fired, okay? We don't like crazy. Or do we just medically board them instead? Woo! I saw them picking up Kaka yesterday and I was like, no, 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 no. This person's going crazy. We don't like that. Even on our application, we said we don't like that. So Vele, we must get rid of this person. Is that what happens there at your facility, Uncle Rafi? Is that what happens? Is that what's happening down there? Or what now? And also, okay, so why don't we put it out there, you know? Like, there should be a handbook that you guys are also having, which are, you have to meet at least 80%. You know, you have to have an 80%. Now, you guys are operating like Natas. Natas keeps telling us that we failed. Yeah? Keeps telling us that we failed, but apparently they cannot give us our question papers. So that we see where we went wrong on that question paper. They cannot give us our question papers, but they're telling us every day that we failed. We failed. No, you did not obtain the necessary. And we must just believe them, apparently. We must just believe them because they are such nice people and they would never lie to us. And we must trust them because they are great and they are wonderful creatures and, right? But what kind of system is that? You don't know if you passed or you failed, right? You don't know. You don't know if you passed or you failed. But they're telling you, even in school, they at least give back our question papers, guys. They give back our question papers so that we can see where we went wrong. But thereby notice they're not giving. Now, do you get your pass rates? They at correctional facility. To get your pass rates, do you get like a certificate of, okay, you got 30% in sharpshooting, you got 20% in what, and do they give you that, or is it just the instructor, and he just feels like, you know what, I'm going to give you an 80% because you got a tight bum. I'm going to do this because you're nice. I like this. I'm going to do this because, Nandi, so. Is it just, is it, Or is there actually a system? And it's also none of our business, most, because we are most not in correctional. So it's none of our business to ask how they measure who passed and at what percentage, etc. But if they say that it's through written, yeah, it's through written and oral and comprehensive, then we would say that, hey, does someone with a grade 9 IQ have that kind of, you know, capabilities? That's why the Namibian nation is kind of mad at you, Uncle Rafi. That's why they are kind of mad at you, because the ones with the degrees, they didn't qualify. The ones with the degrees didn't qualify. The ones with the what didn't qualify. Some people were kicked out of training. Some people were told to come back. People obtained back injuries, neck injuries during training, and they were dismissed. So they are going to be disabled for the rest of their lives. And there's nothing that you as an office can do, guys. And also some people have been recruited while they had mental disabilities as well. Mental health. Mental illnesses, guys. Mental illnesses. And they are there in the correctional facility. Some people didn't finish training, apparently. And all of this is apparently, you know, because the people, they are sending messages. Apparently, come on. So all of this is allegation. It's just me speaking my mind. Because I don't get it. I don't get it. What I want is for us to enhance our advertisements, so that the correct people, everyone, is not discriminated against. Now, Mina, it's only that I don't have enough energy right now in my little life. Mara, if I had the energy, I would apply, and state my disability, and then when they deny, if they deny, and I'll take them to court. And then I'll hit them with the, what is his name? Ndituma. Ndituma versus Minister of Defense. That case was one that says that Kucha cannot discriminate against me on the basis of my HIV status. No. Because it says that everybody, in our same constitution that we uphold, especially those in office, they uphold the constitution. They are supposed to not discriminate. But now if you have a whole advert that says we don't want you and your defects, right? Wouldn't that be discrimination? Because I feel very discriminated against on your behalf. I feel very discriminated against because how... So I cannot go there if I am having a visible, so what is a visible? You're not even clear about what is a visible way of having a disability. Which one is a visible way? Kusha, is it, are you looking at Down syndrome? Like, what don't you want exactly? And why don't you be specific? Because being specific, literally, if you are ever specific, that would mean that you would have to dot out the things that you don't want. And dotting out the things that you don't want would cost you a lawsuit, because it would be against human rights. So, here we are. But how are we going to kill corruption? So I'm not saying that it is corruption that was played out here. No, because there are provisions that are made for people of her caliber. And congratulations to her that she obtained the job, you know? So it's not corruption. It is, for me, my issue is omission. Because had we known that there were provisions like this that were made for everybody, then everybody would have been applying. Then everybody would be there also. So now people are mad because they didn't make the cut. And no one told them about provisions, alternatives that could be made for experience, for example. So we just have our whole plumber and our whole natural born architect that has been building houses and drawing plans for over 10 years, 10 to 15 years. And they're just rotting away because they now have to struggle for themselves. And also one of my issues that I'm bringing up today is that why do correctional services don't want inmates? If you guys are saying that you guys are rehabilitating these people and these people are fit for society, then why don't you want them in your work environment? I thought they are fine. Why can't they apply for a job there with you guys? I thought they are fine, Moss. And this happens with a lot of government positions. You guys don't want them. But yet you guys are saying, as the public, the private sector, we must take them. But you guys, the public sector that has more opportunities for young and old people, more opportunities and more groundwork to cover, you guys don't want them. So how are we supposed to trust that your people that you're pushing out into society are actually okay people? How do we know that we are not going to be robbed and stabbed and shot in our offices and raped in our offices? How do we know if you guys are also not willing to work with them? You're not willing to work with them. You're not willing at all to put them in your systems. But you are saying that we must trust them. So good governance is looking at all these issues. Good governance is honestly looking at the bigger picture and understanding that this thing of throwing away our people, this thing of not being clear and being vague, is not actually the way to go. I have a problem with it. Personally, from my perspective, I have a problem with it. Now I want Uncle Rafi to check into it. I want Uncle Rafi to actually scrutinize and check into it. I know he's very busy, but I want him to check into it. And to him to ask these questions, which are, but why can't we? Are we not a correctional facility? Are we not correcting our people? Because this is, for a long time, people used to throw people into solitary. Solitary confinement was deemed unconstitutional because human beings need air, they need sunlight, they need human interaction in order for them to survive, in order for them to be in a good space, in order for them to mentally thrive. So now you putting them in the shoe, or you putting them in a little box for 2 months, 3 months, where you just slide food and that's it. That's inhumane behavior. But up until somebody brought it up, it was considered to be absolutely normal. There are inmates that have spent 6 months in solitary, 8 months in solitary. 8 months. Rest alone. In a dark room. You excrete there. You pee there. You sleep there. You eat there. No cell phone, no nothing, and it's dark. I assume. Up until somebody mentioned it, it was absolutely okay for people. It's like, ah, yeah, it's gone to solitude. Eh? It's absolutely normal. Up until somebody mentioned that this, no. This is a human rights violation, guys. We cannot leave somebody with their feces and their mess inside a place. You can't. You can't leave somebody in a space alone for all that time and expect nothing to go wrong. Expect them not to be eaten up by their thoughts. The idea is to correct. We're not saying you're monsters. We're saying that the thing that you are convicted for was bad and you're serving your time. And while you serve your time, you correct your behavior. There are certain people that go into prison And they come out and the life outside is no longer a life that they can deal with or they can cope with. And they would opt to commit another crime so that they can go back. Or right before release, they commit a crime that is going to keep them there. Because it's comfortable. Because there's just no life for them outside. Like, yay, what am I going to do? I can't get a job because nobody wants me. Not even the government that is correcting me and rehabilitating me wants me. Am I going back to the life of crime? Did my parents move? Is the house still there? Are my sisters married? People have not visited them in 20 years. So they know nothing. And you are thinking that we are not breeding criminals. If the very same system that is supposed to be correcting them is the same system that turns them away. I'm asking questions. It's not that deep. I'm asking questions. But these are questions that had me thinking. Why? But how do we have good governance? We as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of the clip that we're about to play. We're strictly playing it for comprehensive purposes, learning purposes, and listening purposes. Enjoy.
I'm going to be talking today about good governance, and I said good governance is the killer of corruption. Okay? So good governance can kill corruption. I mean, everybody's always talking about corruption. Oh, Nigeria is corrupt. There's too much looting. There's all sorts of things going on. But nobody ever thinks about the solution. I'm going to try and do that for you today. But before that, let me share some of my ideas with the young ones since you're here. Essentially, I come from a middle-income family. My father was a lecturer in the University of Lagos. So I grew up more or less in the university community. I was a very playful student. I'm telling you this because I know there might be some of you that might be like me, but I know Olumawa has really bright students at some of these schools as well. I was a very playful student. I was a break dancer. Just name anything that parents didn't like, I did it. So it was very difficult for me to go through school. Funny thing is, I left primary school at the age of 9, okay? But I didn't actually graduate from secondary school until I was about 17. So along the way, I had to sit back in class twice, okay? Now, my mom always used to tell me, oh, you're a bright guy, you focus on your studies and stop playing and things like that. And I couldn't find the energy to do that. I don't think I was interested in school as such. So she said, just go on and graduate. And once you graduate, you can go and do your own thing. And that's exactly what I did. After spending 6 years in university, I told my parents one day, I have decided I'm going to go to the UK to study. They were like, what? My aunties were like, you didn't study in Nigeria. You want to go and live on your own in UK and study. It's not going to happen. But I said to them, I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. And Ronke just inspired me with what she said about determination. So that's why I'm telling this story. It's an aside. And I said to them, I'm going to go. And I did. 4 years later, I had 2 degrees. I graduated almost top of my class. And they were stunned. In fact, my final exam, when my mom came, and she saw me watching TV, and she was like, I thought you had final exams. I was like, yes, I do. And then she said, are you sure you will pass? I said, well, wait and see. I was proud that my mom is late now, but I was proud that on my graduation day, she was standing right with me. I had a son, my son is 19 now, but I had a son at the time. And I have that picture, and that's the memory. I told her that day, this is my gift to you. And then now I'm going to live my dreams. That's how I find myself in politics. In the UK, I was a member of the Labour Party as a student, and I helped recruit for the Labour Party. When I came back to Nigeria, I started coming back to Nigeria about 2000, 2001. I took a job. I became an IT consultant, by the way. I took a job in the Senate. And that job paid me half of what I would make in a day in the UK in a month. And I did that job for 4 years. Because I was so passionate about Nigerian politics, I decided that I was going to actually sacrifice something to it. Obviously, it cost me a lot. It cost me a life of luxury. I had to almost struggle for the 4 years. But I'm glad I did it because today, within my political party, I believe I'm a force to reckon with. And my job as a politician is to help young people like you to take it more seriously, to aspire to be good politicians. So let's talk about good governance, the killer of corruption. Okay, I want all of you to repeat after me. My name is, say your name. My name is, and I am corrupt. I didn't hear that. Say it. My name is, and I am corrupt. Okay. I'm sure you guys don't want to be corrupt, right? But we all are. I'm telling you, we all are, one way or the other. You know, the thing about corruption is people have defined corruption as, you know, if somebody says, what is corruption? Say, oh, well, it's an abuse of office, bribery. But, you know, for someone like me, I'm always very practical. You know, definitions of corruption, they'll say corruption is a form of dishonest or unethical conduct by a person entrusted with authority, often to acquire personal benefits. Does that make sense to you guys especially? You can tell a lie and then say, I am not corrupt. But you are. You know, but I would want us for today's discussion to use Cicero's definition. He says it is an abandonment of good habits. We all know what a habit is. Okay, good. So, let me give you an example of how simple corruption can destroy lives. Let's say I'm a contractor for a power company. And then they give me a contract. I bid for it. I win the bid because I know the guy's there. That's what goes on most of the time. And then they say, oh, well, you know, this contract is 10 million, but we want 5 million because we helped you get it. So I say, okay. But the actual, let's say I'm importing cables. The actual cables will cost me 5 million naira. So if I give you 5 million naira, I have nothing left. And then I have a bright idea. I say, okay, let me buy cables, substandard cables for 2 million naira. So I can have at least 3 million naira from the deal. Since I'm giving those guys 5 million out of 10. And so I go on and do that. And they accept it because they are obviously getting paid as well. They accept it, even though they know it's inferior. They put it in the system. I get paid. They get their money. I get my money. Everybody's happy. But guess what happens? That cable will be installed in somebody's house. Maybe somebody in this room. And then one night while they're sleeping, there'll be a fire. And that family might end up losing everything they have, including their lives. That's exactly what corruption does. But we kind of hide away from it and think a corrupt person is the guy with the big house and the big cars and who has a private jet, but who hasn't earned his money. But a corrupt person is a killer. That's how I choose to look at corrupt people. And corruption occurs in the public sector. We all know that. It's the most pronounced. But it also occurs in the private sectors, in companies. Like he said, I have a vast experience in business, in telecoms. In fact, I'll tell you how bad I think corruption was in Nigeria. In 2003, when I went into the Senate as an SA, I stopped doing all government business in Nigeria. All. You couldn't tell me. If you tell me you want to do something, I say, go ahead. I wish you luck, but I'm not going to get involved because it is full of bribery. And, you know, you basically do a job and somebody tells you, bring the money. You take the money to them and they decide how you share it. You know, I thought, I'm not going to have any of this. I'm going to build small businesses. So I ventured into the private sector with a group of companies, a consortium. And we approached a telecoms company. I will hide their name, but I'll hint you. They're under the hammer today. Okay? Now, I approached that telecom company, and I said to them, oh, I've got this idea. I've got this. I know you guys know, you know about the POS now. So I'm talking about 2000. So imagine what a POS was in Nigeria. It was non-existent. Well, I had a company that we come together and we had found a way to sell recharge cards on the POS. So essentially, you come to a POS machine, you would input the amount you want. And also at that time, there was only 1,500 MTN and 1,000 Econet Wireless, it was called at the time. So we approached one of the companies, we approached both companies actually, and they said to us, well, this is a great idea. You know, we said to them, you need to break the units down. What we wanted to do was to give more Nigerians access to these recharge cards at a lower rate. So some people may not be able to buy a 1,500 naira recharge card. We wanted them to be able to buy in smaller units, like 500 and 750. So I'm proud to say that my company was one that mutated the idea to the telecoms companies at the time. Anyway, to the story of how things work. And then they said, oh, you know, we already have a company that's interested in it and all of that. So we don't think it's possible. We'd already agreed with one of the companies to do this anyway. So, and then we would do an exclusive deal. So if any one person is doing it, nobody else can do it. And if you're doing it with the other company, we can't do it with you. I said, okay, fine. So we went and tracked the company that they were talking about. And I can tell you here now that it took the intervention of the then vice president, Atiku Abubakar, to get us a foot in the door. Because the other company had belonged to somebody who was connected with the other company's parent company in their home country. That's the private sector, as in you'd expect good governance. Now, let me move on. Favoritism, nepotism, very familiar in Nigeria. So I become a governor. I wanted to become a governor. And I say, Demola is my friend. I never look at Demola's CV for one day. I make him chief of staff. Okay? Demola, I've known Nengi for 20 years. And I say, come and be SSG. She doesn't even have the experience. That happens a lot in Nigeria. We've had cases in recent times where people's children, family, have been appointed to sensitive positions in Nigeria. That needs to stop. I'm not speaking as a PDP politician today. Let me tell you. I'm speaking as a passionate Nigerian. Now, Robert Klitgaard postulates that corruption will occur if the corrupt gain is greater than the penalty multiplied by the likelihood of being caught and prosecuted. Right? So if I'm going to steal, and I'm going to use the policeman as an example. I love policemen. I grew up, you know, around policemen. So I'm going to use them as an example. Every time I see a policeman and he's extorting money, because it still happens. You've had 10 IGs come, no more checkpoints, no more collecting 20 naira. But even I remember a kid, an exchange experience I had with a kid. This kid was probably about 4. They said, mommy, see police money. And honestly, my heart broke into pieces. A 4-year-old saw 20 naira and said, this is police money. And I told the mom, don't ever give a bribe in front of your child again. But these things are, so let me talk about the policeman so I don't get too distracted. Now, the policeman is, and let me give him a lot of money. 50,000 naira a month, okay? So this policeman is standing on the road in the hot sun, in a black uniform. He has 5 children at home. His kids have been home for a month because he has no money to pay their fees. And then this guy comes along driving, and he has no driver's license. Okay? You wouldn't believe I told you that not having your driver's license with you is actually not an offense. There's something called a producer. You're meant to, within X amount of days, produce that driver's license at a police station. Okay? I'm sure nobody knew that in the room. Now, they will hold you and hound you. Then they open your boot and see 50 million naira. Okay? His wife has rang him 10 minutes ago to say, There's no food in the house. The kids have been at home for a month. Don't come back home if you don't bring money. And he asks you, where did you get this 50 billion naira? And you say, come, don't worry. Let me settle you. Let me give you 1 million. Now you tell me, what would that policeman do at that point in time? 1 million. His problems are going to be sorted by maybe 100,000. And someone is offering him 1 million. Maybe, let me even add something. He sees 50 million and a dead body in the car. What do you think he's going to do at that time? Exactly. So the government has missed it completely when they shout, we are going to fight corruption. I say fight poverty. Fight poverty is the fertilizer that breeds corruption. There is corruption of greed, which is the one that a young guy like, I don't have a car, by the way. I don't have a car. I haven't owned a car for 4 years. A young guy like me wants to drive a Range Rover. I can probably afford a Range Rover, but it will be a stretch. Because I always say, the man that is down does not need to fear a fall. It will be me when he said, I am humble. I was happy. You know, it will be me arriving everywhere in the Range Rover. And then people have big expectations of me. Every time I walk into a room and they're like, is this the Shola Kuti? I like that. But it also will be a stretch because I do a lot of charity work. I wouldn't be able to do that. Then I would want more money. Then somebody will offer me a contract, and I don't do government contracts, by the way, but I will say, my Range Rover needs to be upgraded. Let me just take this one. And so on and so forth. And there's also the corruption of need. That's the example I gave with the policeman. That guy was in a fix. I am not excusing corruption, by the way. The guy was in a fix and he needed to solve his problems. And a miracle comes along. He'll go to church on Sunday and obviously give a testimony about how he didn't even have 200 naira and somebody just came and gifted him 1 million. But he will leave the part about what he found in the boot out. Now, corruption keeps on thriving in our society because people find the cost of living unbearable. It's just unbearable. I have examples. I run companies, I hire staff, and the first thing I ask my staff is, how much does it take you to get to and from work? And when they tell me, I add that amount to whatever I plan to pay them. There is no person on earth. You are setting up yourself for a kill. If you hire a cook that lives in, let me look for a place, Jikoi or Orozo, and you live in Meitama, you have 20 cars in your compound, and you pay the guy 20K a month. The guy spends 500 naira to come to work every day. He's at work for 30 days. He has a family. So you are paying him 15,000 naira a month. Oh, sorry, you're paying 20,000. He spends 15,000 to come to work. How do you expect him to live on 5,000 naira? And yes, he'll come and tell you, I didn't come to work yesterday. My son was sick. And you say, I said, get out of here. So because your son is sick, I will not eat or my house will be dirty. We as human beings, as Christians, as Muslims, we need to revisit these issues. We need to ask ourselves the true question. Are we the ones breeding corruption? Because if you can do a little bit more, and I do everything. I hold nothing back. My house for days, I don't even have DSTV. For months. I haven't had DSTV for 4 months. But if you see me doing things, you'll be like, how can you neglect that? But what is DSTV, a necessity? It's a luxury. So for me, I think the people that can do more should do more for those that cannot do enough for themselves. Now, legal corruption, corruption was legal. Do you believe that? In Europe, it was legal up to about 1999. So you could give a bribe. So if I was doing a deal with somebody, I could give him a car as a bribe. Or I could give him $50,000 as a bribe. But then the strange thing was I need to give the person details to the authorities to say, well, I gave this guy $50,000 to complete this transaction. And they could write it off. It was the same in Belgium. And if it was an export transaction, you didn't have to declare the details of the transaction. Luxembourg, even in the UK, if you can believe that. All this, however, changed when the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, enacted an act and an anti-bribery convention, which was signed in 1997 and finally became law in 1999. So let me quickly run through this because I know I only have 2 minutes. How do you receive corruption? How do you receive it? Do you see corruption and say, I don't want to be associated with this person. I heard he stole $20 billion from his bank. Or do you say, let's call this guy. I heard he buys 500 bottles of champagne every night. How do you receive it? I think we receive it quite well in Nigeria. I personally, I always tell my friends, when they go into office, the only thing I tell them is, I wish you all the best. You're not going to be seeing me until you're out of office. Just don't disgrace me. Let me just try and round this up in as little time as I can. So people no longer view corruption as a vice. They see it as normal. It's a way of life. If you are in one political party, only people in the other political party are corrupt. Your own people are being witch hunted. If a parent or a friend is accused, you defend them. But if someone you don't like is accused, you pronounce him guilty right there without evidence. Okay, but I do solutions too. So I'm going to run through the solutions in... Please forgive me, madam. the government needs to sit down and analyze the situation carefully. Any anti-corruption campaign that does not have the buy-in of all, I didn't say some, all Nigerians, has already failed before it has started. It is crucial that the government looks closely at the corruption of need. That's the one I talked about, of necessity. That is born out of necessity. It is perpetrated by all of us. Yes, you. Everybody here. In one way or the other. Either by omission or commission. The standards of living must improve for the average Nigerian. And very quickly too, he must see corruption as a last resort, not a means to an end. No one can fight corruption where poverty reigns. Please quote me anywhere. No one. No one can fight corruption when people cannot survive on their income or have no means to survive. So the first thing to do is to tackle poverty, the root cause of the corruption of need. For the corruption of greed, that is far more systemic, and I believe also easier to eradicate. It requires a combination of methods, blocking loopholes, creating laws that allow quick prosecution, and all of that. I won't bore you with all that. And I have something special. That's why I said I want to run through this quickly. The balancing game. I said now we get the blame game. When they arrest somebody from the north, they say, oh, they're only arresting northerners. You know, the southerners, because they have a president, are not getting arrested. If they arrest somebody from the south now, they say, oh, it's because it's the northerner that's president. Now, if I could suggest something, every time someone from the north gets arrested, I'm sure there are people in the south too who are on the list. Arrest one, so that when those ones want to complain, you say, but you see now, this guy's from the south. And then that keeps quiet. If you arrest a Muslim, arrest a Christian. No arguments. If you arrest a Muslim from the north, arrest a Christian from the south, and vice versa. Just do the balancing act. Now, if a PDP person is prosecuted, prosecute an APC person. Today, I haven't seen any APC person who, I heard the governors who have had cases since 1999, 2007, they're still walking free. In fact, some of them are senators now. I'm absolutely 100% sure that if all these considerations are taken into account, people will believe in the corruption process and anti-corruption war a bit more. Do you agree with me? So, you know, the agitators for Igbo, they will be reduced. And then maybe they will see the genuinity of the process. Or genuineness of the process, I beg your pardon. Okay, so let me just round up by saying, what are the consequences for corruption in Nigeria? Nothing. Nothing. In fact, the bigger you steal, the easier you walk free. Go and steal a goat. Go to Kiki. You see people that stole goat, phone, but our big men get promoted for stealing.
Just like Hemos.
Some people say, oh, anybody that has any whiff of anti-corruption will not be my government, but they're in their government. So we should stop doing this hypocrisy thing. I love this country. I've given my life and I've lost a lot for this country. If you want to fix Nigeria, you've got to show that you are thinking about everyone. If you want to punish people, punish everyone as well. Okay, I'm going to skip a lot of stuff and just say at the end, let's say at the end, that with drive or with determination, drive and discipline, I am absolutely sure that will most certainly make corruption unattractive.
And that was all she wrote, ladies and gentlemen. So basically what that gentleman is saying, Kuchalaiha, guys, if we just look at corruption and we just abolish it firstly, then I think that maybe we can have a fair chance at actually raising a good country, guys. Like, oof, make the provisions. If we are punishing one, we must punish all. If we're not punishing one, then we're not punishing all. It should really honestly just be one of those things where if we are having provisions for such people, then let's have provisions for everyone. Okay. Make it clear that it's for everyone. It's not just for some. Then Nana, maybe a nation will not follow you like this. Good night.